A61, number 15A.
So, what is with characteristics? All right. My question was, why has naming to do with soul?
Because it definitely describes the main thing.
Yeah. Because it definitely describes
the one main idea.
The one main idea which you have in you, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So that you give it a definite name, huh? And that name is only specific to that very thing. Yeah, good, huh?
Know what you know.
Yeah. All right. We have under names, Mrs. Eddy speaks about defines. We have definite. Where would you put testify? In soul? Huh? Why?
Well, to testify is to make a definite statement.
Absolutely, huh? Yeah. Are you still with me in method? You know, Monday and Tuesday, now it's Wednesday, we said, I want you to get into the method and habit, huh? Not to think in terms, but to ask what do terms mean? What do these terms really mean? If we say testify, what is testifying? What is meant by testifying? And you say, quite right, huh? Testify means that you describe something, huh? Very specifically, exactly, huh? So that it is not to be mistaken, huh? So that it cannot be confounded, wouldn't you say? You lay down a testimony so that you describe and define something that it is specific to that what you define and can no more be confounded, huh? With something else. Huh? Now, I didn't use the term soul, huh? But if we now take everything I said in it, it's one long list of words that all have to do with soul. Huh? Huh? It is describing, huh? It is defining, huh? Testimony, huh? Defining, soul, huh? Defining specifically what it is. That's identity. Huh? What it is. So that it can no more be confounded. What is confounded? In which synonymous term belongs confounded? No more confounded. So, huh? Can you hear? See, that's what you have to... Soul doesn't mean a thing. It's S-O-U-L, finished, huh? But the spiritual meaning of the spiritual language means something. So if you can see the inner nature of what the terms mean, you really get to the spiritual language. Here, the spiritual language of soul. That you say, what is soul? Well, soul testifies rightly. What means it? What means testify rightly? It describes, defines, huh, correctly that which is as what it is, and not otherwise. It doesn't blur it, huh? It doesn't blur it. What is blurring? The counterfeit of which synonymous term? Oh, soul. You see? You get it, huh? It's clear, huh? Blurring means it's not definite, it's not identified, huh? It's verschwommen, it's floundering, verschwommen. Können Sie mir helfen? What is verschwommen, huh? Blurred, huh? Blurred, yeah. All right. Well, that has to do with truth, huh? Yeah. But can you see? You get the real tone of soul which says, golly, that which is what it is, it never changes its nature. Hmm? And it is so definite and so exact that it is unmistakable. Hmm? It's defined, it's unmistakable. This is all to do with soul. Hmm? So that you really get here the testimony of soul. Why it is a testimony of soul? Because soul can truly define and name and specify in such a way that it is absolutely unmistakable, that it cannot more be confounded, no more be blurred. Yes? So that things are what they are. I am that I am. Self-sameness. Then you see, then the thing itself is then described subjectively through other terms. So that there is identity, now we come to identifying, that there is identity between the object and the subject. The way I describe that object is then identical with the object, and that's true identity. Now if you take Schelling, he is usually quoted for his definition of identity. Schelling was one of the classical philosophers in Germany, beginning of last century. He defined identity as reality, at the deepest level, where, and now comes, where object and subject is one, huh? Or are one. Huh? That's identity. That deepest level where there is no more, where there is absolute congruity, absolute coincidence between what the object as such is and how we look at the subject as what it is. So that subject and object are one. Then we have self-sameness. Huh? The self, the object, is, so to say, reproduced exactly in our consciousness. It has the same within us. And there is no more discrepancy between the object and the subject. Yeah. All right. Just another hour and we get it.
Don't we say that the nature, the identity, keeping its own identity in plants, and we know if we put in a tulip, mm-hmm. we're not going to get gladiola or something. We're absolutely confident that isn't going to change its identity. It's already programmed.
Yes. 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 Fine, Sylvia. That would be at the point of soul, huh? The identity is preserved. And now, you said something very wonderful, namely, from where did that identity come from? What precedes identity in spirit? What idea?
Your mind.
No, in spirit?
In spirit.
In spirit, what precedes, right, in spirit, you said it before. Uh-huh. What is that?
Clearly separated.
No. You said it so wonderfully. You said in nature you can see that the species is preserved. It preserves its identity. And you gave the reason why. Because you said like produces always like. Huh? Mm-hmm. Can you see?
Yeah.
Didn't we have in spirit like producing like? Huh? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So, can you see, if you go back and say, well, the identity is preserved, this is a statement. You have to have the reason for it. Huh? The reason for it is in spirit that like can only produce like. Huh? So you have the likeness. Huh? And then you can still go further back to mind and say, but who has conceived of it? What is that that conceived of it? And you say, mind conceives of the true idea. Therefore, mind conceives of all true identities. Yes? So mind conceives the ideas, spirit unfolds it by like producing like, so that like producing like, it always establishes its own identity, never anything else. So that mind never produces something unlike itself. Yes? So we have mind producing, spirit producing like, producing like, soul therefore producing always its own identity. Yeah?
Can you give us an example of that?
An example?
Yeah, of an idea which then is classified and then identified.
Yes, yes. In every development of the idea, you see, you go through these three stages. You open your thought first and you begin to see that mind knows all, and therefore because mind knows all, mind will give you the right idea and will give you at the right time and the right measure the true idea. The light will break into your thought, and a light breaks in mind. Then comes spirit and says, so I stick to that idea. I always let that idea unfold further, and I'm not taking in any foreign element, any human conception. I'm not going to mix it up. I let that idea work, and that idea brings always forth its own ideas. It's of the same nature. If what we say, it unfolds by bringing in new ideas that are necessary for this idea. Until finally it has brought in all those ideas which give identity to this idea. And you say, now I have it. Now I see what I'm going to do. So the creativity of an idea goes first through these three stages. And then something changes with principle. An idea comes to you never in its full identity. It always comes first as a light, as an indefinite form.
An image.
An image, yeah, an image. And then you think, now, what is that image? What does it mean? And it gathers together new ideas that belong to that image. And everything that does not belong to that image, you check out. You say, oh no, that doesn't fit in. So that like attracts like. And as it attracts like, it comes to a point of soul where you say, now it has attracted all the ideas, now I see it in its completeness, that's the identity of it. And then you go at work with it. You come to principle. You put it into operation, in principle. That's one way. It has many ways of mind, spirit, soul. It depends on the level of consciousness where you are, you see. In a spiritual birth, when you take obstetrics, it operates slightly bit on a higher level. This is on a divinely human level. Yeah. But that's how it operates, in the conception of a creative idea. Yeah. Bill, you may tell us perhaps much more. You are an expert on creative ideas, but isn't that, how would you explain the first three, only the first three?
No, I would explain very similarly to the way you did it.
Yes,
I always run into a snag when I hit principle because I have to change.
Yes.
It forces a change when you come to principle. Mind, spirit, and soul always seems quite easy, and when you come to principle, suddenly you're forced into a change because life, truth, and love do something quite different.
Yeah, yeah. So perhaps when we come to principle, we can take it up again and see what... there comes a turn. Yeah. from the nature and then to the essence, to the operation of it. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have names, defines, testifies. We have afterwards that soul is never without its representative. Do you have that? Mrs. Eddy makes that great statement that soul is never without its representative. Why has that anything to do with soul, and what does it really mean spiritually? I mean, the firm has its representative, he has a traveling agent and pays him and sends it away off and says, go and visit these and these firms. That's a representative. But here we have to do with spiritual ideas. And what does it mean that Mrs. Eddy defines the nature of soul as having its own representative, or is never, that's the point, is never without its representative? What does it mean? Now, reason it out from representative, not from what Mrs. Eddy said, because we want to see the reality and proof of what Mrs. Eddy has seen. Who wants to try? Emma, I haven't given you a chance for a long time. All right.
I have a sense of the representative, that in a sense it is mind has presented, and that which has substantiated itself in spirit and has come to identify and name itself in soul is the representative of the idea of mind. It is the representative of mind. It's identified and it's defined in soul.
Mm-hmm. Who would like to have another try at representative? What is a representative? What does it mean? That God's soul is never without its representative.
It represents the original.
It represents the original, huh? Yeah. Therefore, yeah.
That's an interesting point to further your question of a few minutes ago in creativity, that when you come to the third point, people generally hit a stone wall and can't go any further.
They yes.
Stop. And I like to think of that as soul forcing the change to accept the original proposition of mind.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be stated that way by a creativist, but it's the way that I see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it requires that you identify the origin, the true origin. And if you do not identify that true origin, you don't get anywhere.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Are you now quite sure? Somebody else trying representative? With what ideas does it have to do? So we had saying that it represents the origin. What has that to do with what has that to do? Isn't that what we said as the definition of identity? That's reality at the deepest level, where subject and object are one. Well, the origin is naturally the object, huh? And the subject, the representation, must be one. Huh? Don't you see that? That it shows that being, infinite being, in all its manifestation, has a touch of soul which says, I am represented exactly as what I am everywhere. Hmm? Being says, I cannot be without being the self-same everywhere and every time.
Hmm?
Yeah? See, we always come back to the I am that I am. Huh? That's why I feel it's a pity that some of the Bibles have only translated that that God said, I am. Huh? Most of the Bible go on and say, I am that I am. And actually, it's a most interesting statement there. You know, they don't know how to translate that from the Hebrew, because the Hebrew has no future tense. And this was quite a drawback for the old biblical writers, especially for the prophets, who had always to prophesy in the future. Their prophecy was something about the future, and yet their language had no future tense. You see the difficulty they had alone linguistically or semantically, no? And therefore, when it was revealed to Moses the nature of God as the I Am, that, and now they don't know, should they translate it, I am that I ever will be, or should they say, I am that which I am? And so they don't know. Nobody knows, because the language does not indicate it. And the treatises you can read of the theologian about it are most interesting, because they give wonderful, wonderful definitions for us as soul, in every way. They give a wonderful definition as what we would say, that soul is never without its representative. They give definition that run something like this, that they say, it means that God says, I am that which shall always be represented under every circumstance. It gives a sense that God said, I am that which I am going to prove to be always. I am that which will be evident and seen and appear always as that what I am. Can you hear? They tried somehow to bring out what Mrs. Eddy tried, just could show, because she had now the vocabulary of an exact language of the term identity. The Hebrew people didn't know the term identity. Don't forget that. Think, you know, it's quite interesting to see what are the main important terms that Mrs. Eddy uses in order to describe Christian Science. And take this term and see, has the Bible known those terms? And the Bible practically hasn't known any of them. Any of them. They didn't know the term identity. They didn't know the term idea. They didn't know the term system. They didn't know the term order, the term rule, the term method. They didn't know the term plan. They didn't know the term structure. They didn't know the term calculus. Can you see? Those poor people had to take some symbols from the world and from history and from legends and I don't know what, and from family tradition and history and wars and so on, to symbolize with lots of words, terrific lots of words, something which we today can define or express in one small word, abstract word. So can you see the difficulty they had? But the spirit of it was there. Huh? Spirit was there. And therefore we only have to know how to translate it. Yeah? So in that third period of the 3,000 year, God assumed a new name, because they began to see, after all those wanderings and wanderings of trying to find their true identity, to see that each one, Abraham and Jacob and Benjamin and all those people, had a spiritual representative of God, that they represented the nature that God had, and not another nature, so they always renamed them in a spiritual way, huh? So that they were a representative, they represented what is in being. Huh? And so they identified them spiritually, rightly, and so they named themselves differently in order to bring out that identity, gave them a new name, and in this way object and subject were one at the level of deepest reality. Isn't it beautiful? That's the way we have to see the Bible.
Max, could this be right that if there is a one, then the expression of that one can only be expressed through a one? You can't have multiple channels for expressing one thing at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. So that you can say the origin and the channel and the outcome is all one identity.
A direct line.
Yeah. And then you have what we teach on the level of divine science, huh? In the level book, yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's what we have under representative.